Welcome to Jazz Happens, the podcast discussing jazz in St. Louis from the artist's perspective.
Jazz Happens is brought to you by the Young Friends of Jazz St. Louis
and Drinks and Jazz at Nancy's,
produced by Confluence Studios. Welcome to Jazz Happens. Today we have six-time Grammy Award-winning jazz bassist, composer, and arranger, and Jazz St. Louis subscription series artist with us, Christian McBride.
Christian McBride has performed with and recorded with the likes of McCoy Tyner, Herbie Hancock, Pat Metheny, Joe Henderson, Freddie Hubbard, Dinah Krall, Chick Corea, Wynton Marsalis, Sting, The Roots, Queen Latifah, Carly Simon, on and on, James Brown. It's an honor to be here with you, Christian. Thanks for your time. Really appreciate
it. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Your latest album, Christian McBride's New John, was recorded at Jazz St. Louis. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about your recording process and why you decided to record your album at Jazz St. Louis?
It seems that it's getting... The touring life for jazz artists has never been that easy, but it's really difficult now to get an engagement where you play for more than one night or maybe two nights. Mm-hmm. Almost everywhere I tour with my groups these days, other than New York City, Jazz St. Louis is about the only place you can play for longer than two nights.
No.
And so we knew we were going to be here. I think we did a four-night run last year, and we decided to come in, I think, 2 days early. So we were here for 6 days. We were pretty much here for an entire week. And we thought this is the perfect spot to record our new project.
Cool.
You know, we get to break in this new music on the gig, and then during the day, we'll record it.
Perfect.
You know? So we knew there was a studio set up here,
uh-huh.
And we flew my engineer in from New York, and we had a wonderful run here.
Very
nice.
Cool.
Nice. That is cool.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts regarding recording an album in a studio setting versus recording a live album? Do you prefer one environment over the other? And as a music listener, do you prefer listening to one live versus studio recorded album over the other? And this is a lot here, but do you prefer driving the bus and being the master of your own recordings? Or do you sort of prefer also to sit back and be the passenger while you're contributing to others' albums?
That's a lot.
It is a lot.
live versus the studio. I honestly am not sure if live versus the studio is as much of a factor in jazz records as it is for other styles of recording. Because in jazz, you're changing your solos all the time. You're mm-hmm. improvising. So whether you're live or in the studio, the mindset still kind of stays the same.
Okay.
Unless you get a really boisterous crowd, then it's that X factor makes all the difference.
Mm-hmm. But, feed off of that.
Yeah, but oftentimes jazz crowds aren't boisterous.
Which do you prefer?
What kind of crowd?
Yeah.
I love a boisterous crowd.
I mean, I'm an R&B kid, you know what I mean?
I'm used to audience participation. So when I started playing jazz, and these clubs had like these quiet policies.
Right.
And I'm thinking, why would you make them do that? I mean, you don't want people to just sit there and have a phone conversation while you're playing. But
at the
same time, you know, if I've seen many instances where audience members, they want to scream and clap and get into it, but they're nervous. You know, they're like, "Well, man, we don't want to be the only ones here that are like, you know."
I think that was us last. The last show.
I've had that sort of that problem myself, where watching and I want to like clap or whistle.
Yeah.
And it's like, is that going to be okay in here?
Right. So oftentimes when I play, I let the audience know. I said, "Look, you make any kind of noise you want."
Cool.
You know, as long as it's in reaction to something that we're doing on stage.
100%. I follow that trend, that thought.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. So speaking of R&B, being an R&B kid, was there a record or an artist or a tune that you recall as a kid that was like that aha moment? You're like, yes, jazz, this is it. Like
jazz. The first jazz record I heard that did that for me was the 1953 Massey Hall concert with Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie, Bud Powell, Charles Mingus, and Max Roach. I'd heard a number of jazz recordings growing up as a kid, but it didn't stick. Yeah. You know,
mm-hmm. That was when everything clicked.
I was 11 years old, and I started to kind of, I was trying to get into jazz. My great uncle, who's still with us, he's also a bass player. He was the one that, he turned me on to all of these jazz records. And this one record, just the energy just came screaming off of the record.
Cool.
You know, awesome. And something about that record just, that made me fall in love with jazz.
I can't say that awesome. I've heard that record, but I definitely will have to check it out.
Oh, yeah,
now.
Man.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Awesome.
So how about non-jazz influences? What did you listen to as a kid? What artist, you know, did somebody draw you into bass? Was that a jazz thing? Was that an R&B thing or other types of influences?
Well, bass specifically is a family tradition because my great uncle,
like
the
it.
One that got me into mm-hmm. jazz, yeah. he's a bass player.
Cool.
And my dad is also a bass player. So
you just had no choice but to follow your
pretty
genes,
much.
Basically.
Yeah.
That's cool.
But seeing my dad play quite a bit when I was a kid, by the time I was old enough to really sort of appreciate what he was doing, mm-hmm. He was playing with the late, great Cuban percussionist Mago Santamaría.
Cool.
And just one particular gig, I mean, I'd seen him play hundreds of times, but just this one gig, I sat there with my mom and I thought, I'd like to try that. You know? I got my first electric bass when I was 9.
Oh, cool.
Nice.
You're young.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I got my first electric bass. Probably I was about the same age, and I had to save up my weekly allowance of, like, letting the dog out and feeding him and stuff and taking the trash out for I don't remember how long, but
wow.
I saved up enough and got it.
Nice.
So, yeah.
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah. So what were you listening to back then? Was it straight into jazz, or you have
no,
other influences?
I was an R&B kid. My whole childhood was nothing but Motown, Stax, James Brown.
Nice.
Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Cool.
You know, so that's sort of that. I always say that that's my bone marrow.
Yeah.
I had to back my way into jazz.
Yeah.
And I eventually fell deeply in love with that.
Yeah.
But, you know, the core of my being is still, you know, James Brown.
Yeah. That's right. Cool. I think that's kind of, that's normal, right? I think everybody kind of starts with, you know, your sort of natural environment.
Yeah.
If you move into jazz, you start to discover things. And
right. I it's hard for me to think that, I mean, I know there are exceptions, but if you were born after 1950, I'm sure the percentages is that jazz is not the first music you heard.
Right.
You know, I mean, unless it's in the family, you know
exactly,
what I mean?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Cool.
Well, would you be willing to tell us a little bit about a personal project of yours, the Jazz House Kids?
Sure.
Tell us a little bit about
that. That's actually, I have to give all the credit to my wife, Melissa, because she started Jazz House Kids 16 years ago. And at first, it was just something she was doing on the side, because when I first met Melissa, her main focus was as a jazz singer. You know, she had a band and she was going on the road. And just as a side project, she decided she would start this, I think at that time it was like a DBA, you know, mm-hmm. It wasn't even really a full-fledged company yet.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of schools in the Newark, New Jersey area had called Melissa to come in and do some programs, sort of like what we just did here today with these elementary school kids. And she wound up building up a really nice team of musicians that would go into these schools. And she started getting a reputation, and more schools started calling.
It's kind of snowballed.
It snowballed, man. And it went from,
it's when you know you're doing something right.
Right. It went from a school every 2 months to a school a month, a school every 2 weeks,
right.
A school a week.
And it's like, I need help.
You know, right. And then it took off, man.
Awesome.
Cool. Very cool.
Is there any wisdom or advice you'd like to share with musicians, aspiring or otherwise, that might be listening? You know, something like you're talking about, part of your marrow.
Yeah.
It's one thing that they could carry along with them to help them.
Man, it's I always like to think about how fortunate one has to feel that you have the option to become a professional musician.
Yeah.
That's a real privilege.
It is.
Agreed.
That's a real privilege, you know. So, like, the touring life can get hard. Yes, it can get pressure filled. But at the end of the day, we still get to do what we love.
Right. You know?
And if you really, really love the music, if you really want to serve this music, practicing is fun. You know what
well,
I mean?
That's gonna be fun.
If you don't enjoy it, it's gonna
you gotta
be,
enjoy it, man. You have to. You know, and yeah. Unfortunately, I think that there's a certain crustiness in traditional hipness that younger musicians tend to embrace.
Yeah.
And they think, okay, in order for me to be an authentic jazz musician, I gotta be mean and crusty. And you know, I gotta complain about everything. I can't embrace other styles of music. Right. Everyone younger than me sucks. Right. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's
I've played with people that had that mentality, and it just kind of wears on you. And
it
you
does,
don't get
man.
Anywhere. You know?
I look at somebody like Wayne Shorter, who is 85 years old, and nicest man in the whole world. You know what I mean? Not a bad word to say about anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And look at him. You know, he's still going strong.
Still kicking it.
He's still just as creative as ever, you know. And I don't mean like the certain people who are at a certain age, you just, to be politically correct, you have to say they're still killing it.
Mm-hmm.
But Wayne Shorter is actually still
killing it.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Totally.
And so I look at him like that's how I want to be.
Yeah, that's
you know?
Cool.
Awesome.
That's cool.
So
Herbie Hancock too.
Herbie, you know, he's still going.
They're just two nice, beautiful guys.
Yeah,
you know?
Just enjoying life.
Enjoying life, man.
Love music.
You know?
Yeah, and as a musician, it's also a privilege to know and become friends with other musicians that you respect.
That's right.
And
you know, the best musicians that I've met are always the ones that are open to anything. There's some pop song on the radio, and they're like, "Oh, did you hear this bass line in this or this beat?" And you're just like, "Really?"
I mean, it's just music, man.
It's just music.
You know, it's 12
totally.
Notes.
Yeah, that's right.
You know?
Exactly. Exactly. That's
Beethoven cool. all the way up through Bo Diddley, you know, used the same
Beethoven
notes.
To Bo.
That's right. Beethoven.
It's
right.
a book, I think.
Yeah.
You know? 12 notes, man.
It's all what you do with it.
It's all
that's
about
right.
what you
how
do
you,
with it.
You know, put your emotion into it.
Yeah. Well. Yep.
So, so what's next then? Do you have any new projects on the horizon?
Yeah, it's a few things I'm juggling at the moment. My next project that I'm going to record, well, actually, in January, I'm going to make a new big band recording.
Oh, nice!
I'm excited about that. It's going to be all singers.
Oh, wow!
Yeah, so I'm inviting like many of jazz's greatest singers to come and sing a track on my upcoming big band release. And next summer, I'm going to start working with a band that I've had, you know, sort of a side project for about the last 10 years now. But finally, I'm going to make that my primary group, and it's called A Christian McBride Situation.
Okay,
cool.
And features the great Patrice Rushen on keyboards. Piano and keyboards, both DJ Logic and Jahi Sundance on turntables.
Nice.
Allison Williams on vocals and Ron Blake on saxophone.
Cool.
So do you think you guys will be coming through St. Louis?
I hope so. Yeah.
That sounds fun.
So it's going to be like some, you know, some strange avant funk,
sweet,
you know,
sweet.
Kind of
cool.
thing.
Yeah, cool.
Dig that.
You know?
It's cool.
So now we're going to move into a new segment we have called the Jazz Academy Rapid Fire Questions from Students.
Okay. Bring it on.
So first question comes from Rick Kwan.
Got my bulletproof vest on.
It's coming. Here it comes.
First question comes from Ray Kwan. He's a middle schooler and pianist.
Ray Kwan, the rapper?
If he's a middle schooler at Jazz Academy in St. Louis, this kid plays piano in his church and is a worship leader.
Okay.
And his question is...
No, he's not a rapper. Sorry.
Did you ever play in a church?
Yes, I did play in a church. I wasn't a member of a church, but when I was a freshman and sophomore in high school, there were a group of musicians. We would go to different churches all around the city and actually go just sit in. And, there was one of the guys in our group, he was familiar with like a lot of different churches around the city. And we would go and play these gigs. And sometimes we would get there early. And this was my first experience of, you know, sacred versus secular. Mm-hmm. We would sometimes get to the church extra early so we could practice our jazz stuff before the service would start. And so I remember we got to this one church, I don't remember what it was, and we were playing, I think, Moaning or something like that. And man, these church doors came banging open. Boom! Don't you dare play that music in here.
Wow. No tritones.
God will punish you. You're going to hell if you play that kind of music in here. And we were sitting there like,
sorry, we're the band.
Wow. All right.
Yeah, how awkward. We won't play this anymore.
Well, that brother was mad. I'll never forget that, you know. But yes, that was my my little bit of church experience. 2 years of doing that.
Okay.
But I learned a lot of gospel music.
That's cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
We do have a few more questions from Raekwon's Jazz Academy peers. Curse, you want to get the next?
Yeah,
one?
Sure. Why did you pick the bass? Which
my
dad already touched on. Yeah,
exactly. Right. It's in his genes.
In the genes. How many gigs do you play in a year? Approximately.
I don't know. I don't think I gig as much as I used to because the way my career has been over the last couple of years, a few other things have sort of come into play, like my two radio shows. I have one on Sirius XM mm-hmm. and one on NPR. And then the administrative roles, like with the Newport Jazz Festival and the Jazz House Kids, Jazz Museum in Harlem. I'm not like packing my bag and traveling to gigs as much as I used mm-hmm. to, but I would say I still say I get about a good 120, 130 days of travel time per year.
That'll keep you busy.
Yeah, absolutely. Your biggest influence, if there's one artist.
James Brown.
Okay, awesome. Mm.
He's always going to be my main man.
Cool. All right.
Cool. And do you love what you do?
Absolutely.
Have to,
of course.
Right?
Absolutely.
Of course you do. I see the smile on your face right now.
Yeah. Come on, man.
That's right.
Having a good time.
What else would I? The only thing I ever loved as much as music was football. I did think that for like 5 minutes in my life, I was going to try to be a pro football player.
Well, if
I chose pro football, I would have been retired for like probably 10 years or more. Now,
right.
You know,
if you had a successful career.
Exactly. Right. That's right.
You could walk on your knees still.
Exactly.
That's right.
You know,
like that.
Yeah.
So
exactly. Cool.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. Do you want to plug your Sirius radio shows or anything before we leave?
Yeah. Sure. Where can we find you online, websites,
social
media?
My Sirius XM show is called The Lowdown, Conversations with Christian.
Good.
It comes on every Saturday afternoon at 12 noon. And it's an hour-long show, and it features me having conversations and playing duets with and comedy skits with all my favorite musician friends.
Ooh. Awesome.
I like to call it, you know, sort of like the soul version of Mary McPartland's piano jazz. You know? And then the NPR show that I host is called Jazz Night in America. I'm not sure what day that would come on here locally, but if you go to npr.org/jazznight, you can hear all of the archive shows as well as the video shows that accompany it.
Okay.
Cool.
Yep.
Anything
very
else?
Cool.
And as always, ChristianMcBride.com.
Awesome.
Yep.
Well, thank you, Christian. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. We should have these published within the next week or so.
Great.
And we'll kind of trickle them out. So it's been a pleasure speaking with you. And
pleasure
thanks for your
was all
time.
Mine.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks for listening to Jazz Happens, brought to you by Young Friends of Jazz St. Louis. Come hang out with us next time at Drinks and Jazz on January 4th. It'll be part of the artist residency for the Bad Plus. Curtis here, he likes the Bad Plus a lot. I'm looking forward to it, but Curtis has seen them before.
Yeah,
I've not.
Big fan of the Bad Plus. They do
modern music, modern covers of rock pop tunes in a kind of a jazz setting. So check out the Bad Plus. Come hang out with us at Nancy's Lounge on the 4th of January and see the Bad Plus.
That's a Friday night, so no excuses. We'll see you then.